This is Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's turn the spotlight on the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin and meet some interesting people involved in its presentation. This is Spectrum West. Today, Irving, the talking dog, is here, and his good buddy Todd Oliver, both, and more family members, coming Sunday for a Mother's Day show at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. Next week is Creative Economy Week. We'll spend time with Mike Schatz of the Downtown Eau Claire Group and Eau Claire Economic Development about what it means and what's happening. Jim Oliver explores the work of Shakespeare a bit and looks at the Great River Festival named in his honor, featuring a whole menu of things to do and see this summer. Memorial High School brings back their Fine Arts Night, where social issues and the arts collide beautifully to provide an evening designed to move you. And this is where it all begins. We're nearing the end of yet another outstanding season of music provided by the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra, the 42nd, and the spring concert is designed for you, with a bit of we. Parisian Spring, the French Masters. Music director Yasuda stopped by the other day, and he had all the details. You know, for most of us blue-collar music fans, classical music is classical music. Mm-hmm. What should we know about French composers?
French composers actually tend to be thought that like a kind of a impressionist. Mm-hmm. You know, the painting like a Monet.
Yes.
Yeah, it is true. Like we perform actually three pieces by Debussy. Mm-hmm. And Debussy's actually piece is really like some kind of mystic. Sometimes I feel the misunderstanding about the French music. It's kind of a floating, you know, in the air. It doesn't go anywhere. It's kind of an impression. But French people are very passionate people.
Yes.
It is actually. So I met so many French people. I mean, you know, they look cool and everything. You know, they try to behave very gentle. But the passion, they are still Latin people.
They enjoy life.
Right. I mean, yeah, you know that. Yeah, wine, cheese, and they love to eat. And then, yeah. So anyway, especially we do this Debussy three pieces. Very beautiful. At the same time, I can really feel a lot of passion and expression. First piece is actually called a prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun. Start with a flute solo. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Our principal flute player, Tim Lane, you know, he plays just wonderfully. Oh, yeah. Second piece is also by Debussy. It's called Nuage. Nuage is the clouds. So this music kind of describes, you know, how the clouds move in the sky. Uh-huh. But, you know, when you think about the clouds, it's just moving, especially in actually wintertime. So if you see the color of clouds, especially like, you know, right before the sunset, the color is just wonderful, right? The mm-hmm. formation of clouds. And I know that this is the only once. Next moment is different formation. You might not notice that, but every moment of formation of cloud is different. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that Debussy music is like that.
So that was his inspiration, do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Because Impressionists actually wanted to capture, you know, the moment, but at the same time, they didn't want to really just kind of see that, not just the moment, but they understand that everything is flowing, mm-hmm. changing.
I was reading about Debussy, and he has a few famous quotes. We should note, too, that all three composers that are featured in this concert are somewhat contemporary mm-hmm. composers.
Right.
They're not like 16th and 17th century guys. These are 19th and 20th century guys. But Debussy's quote that I thought was very interesting is, "Music is the silence between the notes."
I heard that, too.
He said that.
Right. I really believe that because I quite often talk about that. Before music is played, it's already music is in the silence.
Yeah.
As a performer, especially as a conductor, to set up the tempo and everything, okay? So it's almost a kind of a set everybody ready. So then everybody kind of watch me, right?
Yeah.
I don't just go 3, 4, 1, no. Just kind of I already kind of getting into the kind of a mood of the music. Before the sound, I would say the element of music is already in the silence.
Now, you're also doing some music by Ravel, and he has mm-hmm. Bolero is probably his big deal, isn't it?
Right. I mean, the thing is, actually, I was going to mention that, right, Bolero. He felt that this was probably the disaster.
Hmm.
He was asked to write some ballet music. And he had some kind of a mental condition at the time, kind of a disorder, so that he could not really write music. Just what he was able to do was that repeat this one melody. It's a, to be precise, it's a, I call it a melody 1A and a melody 1B. Slightly different, but you repeat this one. Basically, you play this melody 18 times with a different instrument.
Okay.
Just incredible variation of the same melody. From the very beginning to the end, 15 minutes of biggest crescendo ever written.
Really? Yeah,
I will usually describe this way. Biggest or longest crescendo ever written.
Ooh. How do you make a crescendo that long?
He actually started with a single instrument, right?
Oh, okay.
So kind of a passing the melody. So then he adds like a two, and then becomes two instruments and three instruments.
Oh,
and then, of course, in other, also the accompaniment also. He actually, very beginning, he just started with the pizzicato.
Oh, sure.
With a few musicians. And then,
and even before that, the silence.
Right. Silence, too, right. The very ending is actually, I don't know, everybody plays everything in the fortissimo. It's amazing. Wow. Yeah.
So now the third composer.
Sansan. I'm a Japanese. My French is not.
Well, who cares? He was a child prodigy on the piano, I read.
Right, right. He was actually considered to be a Beethoven at the time.
Oh, really?
Right, for a while.
Wow.
For a while. I mean, I have to say, this is one of his actually signature piece. Nickname is Organ Symphony because this symphony has mighty organ.
Ah.
So this is perfect to perform in a Gärtner Hall because there we have organ.
Off the subject a bit. You must get a little tingle each time you pass the Confluence construction
yeah,
site.
Yeah, of course. You know,
It's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, I saw some kind of a structure is already built.
Yeah.
I mean, it is really exciting. And I always look back, the time I just came here 26 years ago. I came here in 1991. And I was one of the probably the crazy people. We need a concert hall here, a new concert hall, better concert hall.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the time, actually, everybody was going, no, it's not going to happen here. This is all Wisconsin. This is Eau Claire. It's not going to happen. Like, it's not just me, but I mean, many people believed that we need that.
Sure.
I really proudly say that we have a very good orchestra, which deserve to perform in a really good hall. Concert hall, the acoustics is actually our instrument.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that space is our instrument.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, because we use our musical instrument to generate the sound. Then we need that space to enhance the tone and everything.
Are you already planning the first concert in the Confluence by the symphony? The symphony's first gig in the new place?
No, I've been talking to many actually musicians and also some business people who can support this project. I mean, I would like to see something big, possibly Mahler Second Symphony. We did actually perform like 4 years ago. When we performed the Mahler Second Symphony in the Gärtner, stage was fine, but we didn't have enough capacity to actually hold enough number of audience. They couldn't get in. Then we actually left the door open. We already have this orchestra. We can do this. So I would like to do that because the Mahler Second Symphony also requires a big choir as well. So it's going to be a very big community event, or maybe Beethoven Ninth Symphony again. Yeah, those kind of something big.
Saturday night, Gärtner Concert Hall, Parisian Spring, the French Masters, Nobu Yasuda. Thanks for being with us again, and thanks for another memorable season. And I can't wait for the Confluence.
Yeah, I know. I can't either, yeah.
Debut.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Spring into summer after having shared an evening with the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. Again, Saturday evening, 7:30, Gärtner Hall, Haas Fine Arts Building, UW Eau Claire. CVSymphony.org is the website, 715-832-6366. Now, coming up, Irving the Talking Dog, celebrating how the arts bolster our bottom line, and Bill Shakespeare has some fans who congregate every summer in Winona, Minnesota. A year ago, we reported on the first in a series of fine arts nights at Eau Claire's Memorial High School, wherein a topic of social relevance was interpreted through artistic demonstration. Immigration was the 2016 theme. This year, the community event is titled The Migration of Misinformation. The semi-self-guided tour involves visual art, music, theater, dance, poetry, world language, and more to immerse the visitor in the discussion. Spectrum West continues with Amber Dernbach, who teaches theater at Memorial.
We're still focusing on migration, and we're looking at it in a broad context in light of the fact that we haven't seen a lot of changes from last year, more travel bans and roadblocks, literally making life for refugees even more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
We're continuing with that as a component. However, part of our subtitle this year, last year our subtitle was, you know, home was, home is, and that delicate balance when you have one foot in a different country or a different culture. This year, we're really investigating ways information or truth is sometimes bended and the stages that the truth can move through.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have a lot of projects using that idea of migration in a broader sense. For example, our orchestra teacher, Soma Pierce-Smith, she's picked some music that has to do with migration, and there's a piece that the orchestra is playing called The Water is Wide.
Oh, sure.
Yes, and it's a beautiful piece. And so in preparing her students for this piece and as she's teaching the piece, she's also talking with students about how the Hmong community that we have in Eau Claire has crossed the river.
Mm.
And Africans coming to America across the oceans in slave ships, and Syrian refugees using rafts again in an ocean, Cubans making it to Florida, talking about the water is wide in a much different context than you may be thinking. She has another piece that is specifically about Antonin Dvorak coming to America from the Czech Republic and how his own personal immigration affected his composing.
Mm-hmm.
Many different contexts with visual arts, world languages, the theater arts students that I work with, the Amnesty International group, some creative writing students. So it's a true multidisciplinary project.
Okay, so I show up at 7 o'clock on Thursday, the 18th of May at Memorial High School. What's going to happen?
We'll have a kickoff in the auditorium.
Okay.
And at that point, everybody will be given their own passport, just like you would if you were embarking on a journey of your own. And that passport serves as your schedule. It'll give you an idea of what's happening throughout the building. There's a lot to see. It's fairly concentrated within two different sections of our first floor, so there'll be a map, and we have plenty of volunteers letting people know where they need to head if they're feeling a little bit lost. At the kickoff, there'll also be some music and a short film. Some of our film students at Memorial have been making about the process of creating this piece, because we've been working on this project all school year, and the film club has been documenting some of that. And so that'll serve as a brief introduction. And then really at that point, it's pick and choose what you would like to start with. There's so much to see and experience and listen to that you just can kind of look at it like a menu and decide what you'd like to try first. The event's open until 9:30.
So you have time. And it doesn't cost anything.
It's open to the public. We really want the community to be present. Last year, we had a really fabulous turnout. This is a way for us as a school to really reach out, and that is definitely a goal with part of this project is community outreach.
I think you do a wonderful job with that. This really says learning to me. I mean, it's like a field trip without the field, and it's for the people who are attending, not the students.
Correct.
The
students have been preparing how to help make this a positive field trip experience.
Yeah, sure.
We want people to get a sense of what it's like to be in someone else's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Part of our goal with this project that we talk with students about is, why are these stories relevant? Why is it important to know other people's stories? How does that shape how I view my community? And often what the students realize over the course of the year, and this happened last year, is that they learn about a lot of other segments of our community in Eau Claire they may have not been aware of before. And as far as the learning goes that you referred to, Al, that I constantly ask my theater students is, how can you connect your own personal actions and the arts to the lives of other people, including people you've never met?
It's all an eye-opener, and in some cases, it'll be an ear-opener, too.
Yes, it definitely will.
Please accept our compliments on finding new ways to engage young people in ways that add meaning to their education and, I think, above all, maybe make it memorable, because this is really hands-on stuff.
So true. And these are the kinds of experiences that 5, 10, 20 years from now, the students will carry with them, because it is, as you say, it's that the act of doing that becomes incorporated into the fabric of who they are. And certainly my goal is that in addition to holding on to that memory, it also spurs these students to use a voice to work for the good of other people.
Plus, they're working hard to put this on, which means
they
that they're applying that hard work to something that's going to turn out to be unforgettable. This is probably one of those times, and you can put that feather in your hat. Even as they grow older, they'll say, you know, I remember that, those events that we put on, and look what it did for me. Look how it shaped the person I am today. So that's pretty cool, Amber.
Thank you, Al. And thank you for that program you ran, too, because we used that as one of our sources about the guy in Pepin.
Oh, yeah.
That, again, just like last year, the bulk of our everyday resources that I bring in, we're listening to radio clips, public radio. It's the most immediate and trustworthy news. We talked about that piece a lot. And, you know, I have a girl in my class who's from Mexico. And after we played that story and she started to cry, she said that she was walking through the Gordy's parking lot. And she said, all I wanted to do was buy two limes to make my family dinner. Some guy yelled at her, go back to Mexico.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And she said, how can he tell by looking at me? How can he tell? I could be Native American. I could be anyone. Why does he pick Mexican?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I want to meet that guy.
Yeah. No kidding. I said the same thing.
I have a few things I could tell him. All right. Go back to your busy day. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Al.
See you.
Bye.
Yes, some people have to swim upstream against a current of ignorance, but if they keep paddling, they hopefully and eventually get past all the debris to a tranquil pool where you find everyone splashing around together, having a great time, while the debris just floats away over the dam on its way to hopeful insignificance. The event again is at Memorial High School in Eau Claire, Thursday evening, May 18th. It all begins at 7 o'clock. Don't go away before you meet Irving, the dog who talks, unless you're planning on going to see him in Menominee on Sunday. And yet to come, all the ways we're going to observe Creative Economy Week. Support for WPR comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona. Collections comprised of art inspired by water from European and American masters, including Picasso, Audubon, and others. More about the museum at mmam.org. Support also comes from Marquardt Toyota, offering the all-wheel drive Highlander, an SUV committed to reliability. Marquardt Toyota is located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or at marquardttoyota.com. Well, here comes an example of one of the reasons Jim Oliver is such a treasure here on Spectrum West, because when it comes to experiences like theater, he approaches the conversation from a place of involvement. You'll hear that understanding in the following dialogue about another entertainment opportunity on hand in the neighborhood of Western Wisconsin.
The Great River Shakespeare Festival in Winona is Minnesota's largest professional equity theater outside of the Twin Cities. It's a professional acting company of 16 actors plus 90 designers, directors, technicians, apprentices, and other staff. They come from around the country to present for productions and repertory. They have education programs, concerts, and other events over a six-week summer season on the campus of Winona State University. The festival begins June 23rd and runs through July the 30th. Joining us by telephone to talk about the upcoming 14th season of the Great River Shakespeare Festival is Eileen Moeller, the festival's marketing and sales manager. Well, I'm just going to let you go ahead and start talking about this year's season.
This year we have a very exciting season. We've got some new features that we haven't had in the past. Instead of three professional productions, we have four professional productions this season. We have The Comedy of Errors and Richard III, which are both Shakespeare plays. We also have An Iliad, a play by Lisa Peterson and Dennis O'Hare. And we also have Shipwrecked and Entertainment, The Amazing Adventures of Louis de Rougemont as Told by Himself, which is a play by Donald Margulies. Those are very different plays than the Shakespeare plays, but they fit into our overall theme this season of storytelling. We're exploring the theme of storytelling and who tells stories, who do we listen to, what kind of stories do we want to hear. So all of the plays fit into that central theme. And then we also have our Internet Apprentice production, which is Henry VI, The Rise of Richard, put together by the directors of the Apprentice program, which features cuttings from all of the Henry VI plays to show how Richard rose to power and how the stage was set for him. And those are just the productions themselves, not to mention all of the other events that we have going on. Free concerts on the green every Friday and Saturday night. The Will Run, which is on July 16th, that's a 28 furlong race. It's open to all. And if you don't know what 28 furlongs are, it's just over a 5K. So if you've run a 5K, you can run 28 furlongs and you'll have a new personal best. We also have Calathump, which is an annual fundraising event we do, which features all of our company members showcasing their talents, different from what you'd see on the stage. So you might see juggling or singing or something that you didn't expect from that actor. We also have educational events. We have conversations with company members, narrated set changeovers, so you can see how the set changes from one production to another. And then we also have our front porch events. Speakers come and discuss topics relevant to the season. The highlight this year is Kevin Kling, best known for his commentaries on National Public Radio. He delivers really hilarious autobiographical stories about growing up in Minnesota, which are really enjoyable. So we're excited to have him this season.
Now, you have a whole bunch of actors. Where do you attract actors, directors, and technical people?
Well, they do come from all over the place. We have some that come from Los Angeles, some that come from New York, Texas, Tennessee. We've even had a couple actors in the past who have come from overseas. Yes, our company is incredibly diverse. Oftentimes, they travel from quite a distance to be with us, and I think that speaks to the caliber of our company and the quality of our productions.
Now, just getting back a little bit to the season, there are two non-Shakespearean productions. As I recall, last year there was one non-Shakespearean production. Is this going to be a bit of a trend that you're going to have more non-Shakespearean productions in the season?
Well, I can't really speak to that at the moment. We do try and grow our festival in new ways every year. But as far as adding other productions, that's something that we will decide as the years go on. Of course, we would love to see the festival grow every year. But at the moment, we're excited about dealing with the ones that we have on hand.
And the reason I bring all this up, I happened to run across an article written by Peter Marks, who is a theater critic for the Washington Post. And one of his comments was, many Shakespeare companies are inserting musicals into their seasons for box office reasons. Are Americans too intellectually lazy to fully appreciate Shakespeare anymore? I raise that issue, I guess, because I've made a nuisance out of myself of some of the local theater companies because I say, why don't you do a Shakespeare once in a while? And they say, well, we have to pay the bills. And that is a dirty little secret of any nonprofit organization, particularly arts organizations, that you have to pay the bills. How is the Shakespeare Festival doing financially without getting to a lot of specifics?
Well, I think that's a wonderful question, and I really enjoy that you brought up that article because we actually shared it on our festival Facebook page. One of the reasons being that we actually found that our audiences love Shakespeare. They appreciate the stories being told, and we believe that it's not lazy audiences, that maybe the problem is lazy directors or lazy actors, and that is not an issue that we have here at the Great River Shakespeare Festival. Our audiences are engaged. They're excited to see what we do differently with Shakespeare's plays every year. You know, we kind of push back against that assumption that maybe that article's author should have come out to the Midwest and seen what we have on offer here.
You threw in lazy actors, and I'm surprised to hear that because it always struck me that actors really like to do Shakespeare just because of their own personal growth as actors. And from some limited personal experience of mine in community theater, I had one opportunity to act in A Midsummer Night's Dream once. It was probably the greatest thing that ever happened to me as an amateur actor because I found myself really growing as an actor as much as my limited skills would allow. So it's good to hear that you have people who are buying into this whole idea of the value of doing Shakespeare productions.
Yes, I mean, we at the festival believe that it's not so much the language that's old, it's when you treat it as something that's really familiar instead of looking for new ways that it applies to our everyday life. Last year we did Julius Caesar, and there were some conversations that happened within the community related to, at that time, the upcoming election, because there were so many different themes of power and politics in Julius Caesar that are still relevant today. And so it's not so much the text or the plot that is outdated, but when we treat it as a classic instead of looking for ways that it is relevant to things that are happening in people's lives today, that you lose something. And so, you know, we try and remember that our world is changing, that the community is changing. We need to look for ways to make these stories relevant to things that are happening in people's lives. And so those themes of not just the dramas, but also the comedies, those feelings of first love or of meeting someone by chance or of being lost in a beautiful forest, those are all things that everyone can relate to. And so it's just a matter of finding a new way to tell the story.
Getting back to the season and the operation of the theater company, there is an educational component.
Yes. One of the cornerstones of our festival is our education department. We offer education programs for all ages, from kindergarten all the way through senior citizens. Programs like Chill with Will, Will's Power Players, and Shakespeare for Young Actors and Designers are all for our school-aged students. And then we also offer opportunities for people who come on group tours, community learning to do things like backstage tours or have discussions with directors and actors. So that's a major part of the festival. We're always engaging with community members and keeping a discussion going about you know, what is happening in our world, what is happening in the play.
So tell us, how do you get tickets to see the shows at the Shakespeare Festival?
You can purchase tickets over the phone or online at grsf.org. And again, that is grsf.org. Our phone number at the box office is 507-474-7900. Or if you're in Winona, you can stop in at our box office. Our office is located at 79 East 3rd Street in downtown Winona.
Well, we've been talking to Eileen Moeller, who is the marketing and sales manager for the Great River Shakespeare Festival. The festival's 14th season opens June 23rd and runs through July 30th at Winona State University. This year's productions include Shakespeare's The Comedy of Errors and Richard III, Shipwrecked and Entertainment, The Amazing Adventures of Louis de Rougemont by Donald Margulies, and a modern retelling of Homer's classic tale, An Iliad, by Lisa Peterson and Dennis O'Hare. Eileen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Jim Oliver and guests on Spectrum West, a weekly highlight. Here's a quick Spectrum memo. Sunday concludes the 45th season for Flambeau Valley Arts as they present the Karkowska Sisters, Karkowska Sisters, here we go. Violin and piano duo with worldwide critical acclaim. It's for the whole family. They're fun. They're also serious musicians. Ladysmith High School Auditorium, again, that's Sunday, 3 p.m. Well, things artistic and cultural are making their marks, often in the black column of people's ledgers. It's because of that full-bodied contribution that organizations like Arts Wisconsin and West Wisconsin Factions of the Creative Community, Government and Development are celebrating Creative Economy Week, which begins Saturday. Mr. Mike Schatz leads the Downtown Eau Claire organization and is Economic Development Director for the City of Eau Claire.
Downtown Eau Claire Inc. and Volume 1 actually started a series about 10 years ago called an Idea Lounge, and that's where we started talking about key issues. And one of our first Idea Lounges was on the creative economy and what Eau Claire had at the time, what we needed to do, and how to go about doing it. We subsequently had another Idea Lounge that dealt with how the university could sustain creativity in the Chippewa Valley. So it's been our radar now for quite a few years, but I think now other people and other organizations are seeing the importance of it too. And we've come a long way in the last 10 years in building places for the creatives to work, co-working spaces and things like that, more emphasis on arts and culture. We're building a big performance center downtown.
Oh, are we?
And also the music venues. We now know how important they are and how much income and revenue they bring into our communities. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've noticed is that people are moving here because of their exposure brought about by our culture and arts, our music festivals. We put on a session a year ago where we invited five couples who had just moved to the Chippewa Valley to come and talk about why. Mm-hmm. And every one of them said that they either came here because of a music festival or they saw what was going on with the Confluence Project. They thought Eau Claire was a city that they could make an impact in and get involved in.
Wow.
And so it was, again, this culture and arts and music that brought people to our community. And so I think it's having a big impact. This Creative Economy Week, this is the second annual one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was developed by Arts Wisconsin and the Wisconsin League of Municipalities. Those two organizations started it. It's a Wisconsin week, and we had a real good turnout last year for the events we put on, and this year we've doubled and tripled it. So it's mm-hmm. very impressive, all the things going on.
Because it's Creative Economy Week statewide, Eau Claire has to be someplace that people are watching because it's kind of an explosion.
Yeah, it really is. So the week is May 13th to the 20th.
Right.
We've just been in Time Magazine and Outside Magazine, again, kind of centering on our music festivals and our young entrepreneurs that are in the cultural arts areas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we have been a shining light of what's going on here. We're having other communities visit us to see things that are happening. Just the amount of activity that we're going to have for that week is really going to be a great showcase of what's going on here. All the music festivals are about to kick in,
mm-hmm.
and should be a dynamic summer here.
Yeah, as you were saying, as early or as recently as 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, the downtown discussion in Eau Claire and possibly other places was of the normal variety. Struggles, looking for anchors, how to attract entrepreneurial investment. Today, you're kind of basking in a renaissance. But I'm going to put words in your mouth by saying, I'll bet you're not taking any of the good stuff for granted, are you?
No, you never do. Economic development is a constant. We liken it to a marathon where it just keeps going. It's not a short sprint race where you're done and you can rest on your laurels or things like that. So we're always looking at what are the latest trends, what are millennials like, what do retirees want, keeping on top of that, what can we add to our community to make it a place that people want to live in,
mm-hmm.
and just making sure that we're also marketing and telling people the story about us. You don't want to take it for granted, and you want both our citizens that are here to enjoy what we have, but also new people, tourists, and people that you want to come to your community. In economic development, as you said, you've seen a lot of changes in my 35 years in economic development. We used to only attract businesses and mm-hmm. manufacturers and such, and now we've come a long way where now we're doing the quality of life things, the quality of place, so that you have the amenities in your community where talented people want to live. And so finding people, bringing them to your community, and having the things that they want to do away from their work life is mm-hmm. very important. And those communities that have that kind of thing seem to be the ones that are growing the fastest and having the best responses.
Sharing microphones with Mike Schatz. He's executive director of Downtown Eau Claire Incorporated, also City of Eau Claire Economic Development Director. Our topic is Creative Economy Week. It runs May 13th through the 20th in Eau Claire and all over Wisconsin. Tell us some of the stuff you have going on.
This past Tuesday, we will have had a proclamation by the City Council mm-hmm. declaring it Creative Economy Week. Starting Saturday the 13th, we'll kick it off with a panel discussion on the state of our creative economy.
Yep.
So this is where we will kind of talk about where are we at, where have we been, what changes have come about, what progress we've made, and what do we still need to do to keep this movement going. So yourself will be part of that panel.
I will.
And it should be
a
good turnout. I should say right away, if you want more information about everything going on, go to downtowneauclaire.org. We've got a section on creative economy, and there's so much going on, it'd be hard for me to talk about every single thing. But so that kicks it off on Saturday with the state of the economy. On Monday, we have the state of our visual arts and design. and also the state of our literature. On Tuesday, we have the state of our theater and writing for exposure, why writers need to get paid for communities to flourish. From there, we go to how to become a full-time maker, Sounds Like Home, and the Designers Association, Dairyland Designers, are having their very first kickoff event.
Yeah, that's cool.
On Thursday, the gallery walk, so 9 different galleries. You can go from gallery to gallery, and that's a first ever also being kicked off.
That's great.
We have Songwriters in the Round also Thursday night, the 18th. And then on Friday, there's a book release and reading of poets and the Twig issue release party. And so you can see there's just all kinds of things going on. And I just touched on some of the highlights. Really, you need to go to the website and you can see all the other things that are going on. But an impressive group of creative people in this community, places that they're going to be at, Artisan Forge, where you have metal workers and sculptures and potters. We have things going on at Forge in Banbury Place, where there's a kitchen incubator. Over at the Oxbow Hotel, down at the State Theater, all these great places, venues for seeing this creative economy and all this talent that we have in Eau Claire.
Yeah, and swing by and take a look at the Confluence Building.
Yes.
Site, that's kind of exciting.
It is.
Next week, I'm having Ray French on the show to talk about the Jumpstart Downtown Project. And I think what that points out, it's fun to be on this bandwagon, but in order for a downtown to be truly vibrant, it takes diversity. For a downtown to be what it needs to be, your focus is pretty broad.
Right. So number one, we're a very much an office destination. Over 20% of all workers in Eau Claire come downtown every day from Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. So we've got this great worker venue already where people are working in offices and retail and such. So then how do you diversify from that? Well, one of the things that the city and the Redevelopment Authority wanted to do is create more nighttime activity and more housing. And I guess that's one of the highlights that we can say we've been very successful at, as there's been a ton of new apartments downtown. They're all filled. There's waiting lists. So you got these people now that are living here 24/7. You got them working. You got them living and get a lot of new restaurants. You have 2 new hotels, beautiful bike trails that connect all the surrounding neighborhoods. So it's very walkable downtown now. Many of the streets have been reconstructed and have a nice look to them. You see some retailers in crafts and other fields that are doing real well. It's not the downtown that our grandparents knew where it had the big box retailers, but it's a different vibrant downtown with all those things that I just described being a good mix. Lots of venues for music, the outside concerts that go on, the farmers market, which brings thousands and thousands of people to downtown. So, yeah, we're real fortunate that it's all coming together. The trend is for people moving back to urban centers, and we've been fortunate to give them that downtown option.
You know, many people, I think, and I'm coupling them with me because I didn't know it, don't know that Downtown Eau Claire Incorporated is a nonprofit organization. You can always use volunteers.
You're on the right track because without our volunteers, we couldn't do the job that we've been doing. So we're just thankful that we've had so many people give their time and efforts to making this a great place to live and work and play. You can go to our website. We do have a contact form that you can fill out. It asks what your interests are. 5 or 6 different committees you can serve on. We have the board. We're trying to start what we call downtown guides, which are people that would volunteer to be on the streets and help tourists find the best place to park or where are some of the cool things they should take in when they're here. You know, people that can be friendly on the street and and make it a positive impression on those that visit.
There have always been pockets, Mike, of creative and artistic endeavor all over Western Wisconsin. But in the past few years, it all seems to be coalescing. It feels natural rather than forced, like as if it's just our time. Does that feel that way to you guys?
That feels exactly right. It's kind of cool because at the same time that Downtown Eau Claire Inc. was starting to talk about this movement and stuff, you had a group like Volume One that was just starting up about the same time, and they were all about arts and culture too. So that was a natural partnership. the city and RDA created venues of places where activities could happen, and mm-hmm. people naturally gravitated to those areas. So you started that outside connectivity. And then the housing brought people downtown, and you just saw them hanging out. And, mm-hmm. and then some of these festivals that have popped up. I think others became believers, developers who wouldn't touch us at first till it was proven that downtown would be successful have come on board. What we've done is really changed the attitudes. If you talk to people 15 years ago, they said, why are you trying? It's not going to happen. And now, mm-hmm. you know, I sit back and just smile because we mm-hmm. proved it could happen. But it feels like there's just movement all together now. Everybody on the same page of, yeah, downtowns are important. They're the heart of a city. We're showing all the things that can happen. And it seems like people's wants are in line with what we're doing here. And it just seems to be flowing very smoothly.
It's called Creative Economy Week. All the official events begin Saturday, and they run the 13th through the 20th. Mike Schatz, Executive Director, Downtown Eau Claire, Inc., and City of Eau Claire Economic Development Director. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. We've got a lot to show and tell here.
DowntownEauClaire.org is the website. Creative Economy Week beginning Saturday, 3 o'clock at the Lakely is the one we'll be at in Wisconsin and in this river valley of ours where it is loud and clear. Creative Economy Week, I mean. Irving and Todd next on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Eau Claire X. Here we go. I'm going to start that over. Support for WPR comes from Explore La Crosse, announcing River of Festivals featuring River Fest, Great River Folk Fest, Irish Fest La Crosse, and over 50 other festivals. Details at explorelacrosse.com. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, providing up-close live eagle viewing, daily bald eagle programs, and environmental education about the Upper Mississippi River watershed, nationaleaglecenter.org. And now, ladies and gentlemen, what Spectrum West would be complete without a talking dog? And news of a wonderful, sometimes zany show coming to entertain ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Todd Oliver arrives Sunday at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee, bringing Irving, that famous dog, and a whole cast of characters who need Mr. Oliver in order to carry on a conversation. Todd Oliver was driving in Missouri the other day, and he answered his cell phone. You know, going down this path, it was interesting because I was online and I was looking up people like Sherry Lewis and the great Lester was a guy that I read about. Today it's, you know, Jeff Dunham is probably one of the better known guys out there. I also had a ventriloquist dummy when I was a kid. I had a Howdy Doody doll. I got to be pretty good at it. So then again, the curiosity kept going, and I thought, well, I got to figure out where the word, because ventriloquism and ventriloquist, those are odd words. So I checked
Latin.
It. Yeah, it's Latin to speak from the stomach.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, years ago, it was a kind of a wives' tale. They thought that we made the voices down in our stomach. But with the illusion of a distant voice, it almost sounds like it's coming from our stomach or it's coming from a telephone. Yeah. But wives' tales and gossip and rumors, you know, we use the diaphragm, as a singer uses the diaphragm, you know, for power.
You're not just a ventriloquist, the word we've been defining in the last few minutes. You are the proud owner of a talking dog.
Well, I sure am. I sure. Sometimes I think that dog owns me.
I've had dogs all my life, and I've sat late at night and stared at my dog and said, you know, I think you can talk. Why don't you just go ahead and talk? And they just, and they kind of tilt their head going, what the heck is he talking about? I'm trying to picture the first day that Todd is with Irving. That's the name of your talking dog. And as many people who have dogs as companions do, they teach them tricks. So you're working on rollover, you're working on heel, you're working on sit. And then comes this moment when you say, Irving, let's teach you to speak. And then, and then what happened?
Well, then my life was never the same.
I'll bet.
I made a good living as a ventriloquist, you know, up to that point. I was about 36 years old, I think, when I got the original Irving. I still use my little wooden-headed friends that are in the show.
And I did some television shows over at TNN back when it was the National Network. When I lived in Nashville, I did all their shows. And a producer said to me one day, he said, Todd, what else do you have besides the dummies? I told him about this idea, and he encouraged me. And that's the big word, is encouragement. You know, we have a message in our show, and the message is practice patience and encouragement. I came up with the idea, and I contacted a couple magician friends of mine, and we talked about different ways to create this illusion of a talking dog. A great deal of research and development, and it's evolved over the years. The first night Irving went on stage, the place went nuts. I'll never forget it. It was the original hook I needed for more television and to separate me from many of the other ventriloquists out there. And then right away, you know, we got signed to an agency in Los Angeles, and I got a manager. And
wow.
And then we did a bunch of television specials following year. We did the Oak Ridge Boys Las Vegas special, Penn & Teller's Las Vegas special. We did some Walker, Texas Ranger episodes. We did the Howie Mandel show on CBS. We did the Today Show and a bunch of them, you know. And then came the first Tonight Show, and then another Tonight Show. And then we did Letterman and Craig Ferguson, and that tornado tore the roof off the theater in Branson. I was out of work. America's Got Talent called, and I had turned them down before. But then my manager at the time, that show gets more viewership than Leno and Letterman combined. And I said, well, I better do the show. We did it, and we were a top four finalist.
There you go. Todd and Irving. Let me remind people, we're talking with Todd Oliver at the Mabel Tainter in Menominee, Wisconsin. Special Mother's Day show. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Sure is.
So a lot of dogs like to take rides in cars. Is Irving with you?
No, he's not. He's at home today.
I was going to ask him about what's it like being a famous dog, because that's something we've all been waiting to hear.
Here, I tell you what, we're almost home. Pulling in here, I'll get him here. And
really?
I want to talk to you. Yeah.
You sure? I need a little bit of an hors d'oeuvre before the Mabel Tainter in Menominee. So.
Okay. Ooh. All right.
Do you have to call him, or does he come running, or what happens?
No, he's usually waiting right by the area. Yeah. All right. Come in. Oh, hang on, Al. Come in.
Yeah.
Come on. Hey, Irving. We're talking to Al Roth.
What? We're on the radio. On the radio?
Yeah.
Now, who's the genius that put the ventriloquist on radio? Well, what do you got next week, a mime? Why don't you get a juggler? Boy, it must be a slow day in broadcasting for Al Roth.
Would you be nice? I can do without your funny remark.
Yeah, try it sometime, see what happens.
Okay.
Oh, so
we're talking about Menominee, Wisconsin. The Mabel Tainter.
Yeah, I used to date her.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No. Everybody knows that Mabel Tainter is the theater.
Who told him?
No, listen. Irving, would you just behave yourself? We're promoting our upcoming show.
All right.
What do you say to Al? Come to the show.
All right. Buy the ticket. We need the money.
All right. Well, there you go.
Well, see, and I was going to ask him how it feels to be famous, but I can tell he doesn't lack any confidence at all. So. His answer would probably be, it's no big deal. So thanks for doing that, and thank Irving, and give him a treat when you hang up. Yeah.
Nobody works for free. He gets his treats.
Attaboy. Sure. Audience participation, Todd. What, potential Mabel Tainter audience members are listening. What can they expect?
Well, I get people on stage. I turn them into human dummies. I give them voices. And let me tell you something. You haven't lived until you've seen a big farm boy up there with a voice that doesn't match his face.
No.
So
yeah, that sounds like...
There's some other things we do, too.
Are you a musician? Because I read the fact that there's original music, too. So what do you do?
I'm a piano player, guitar player, and a singer. Right. And I wrote some songs for the show.
Cool.
We have a song called Man's Best Friend that's in the show.
Hmm.
And then there's also a little bit of magic in the show, too, with the... A couple of birds and a bunny, and so it's a fast paced 90 minutes. You know what I do is, whether you're 4 years old or you're 104 years old, we can all laugh at the same jokes and laugh at the same stuff. The material is down to earth stuff that everybody can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Blue collar, white collar, it doesn't matter. My style of comedy, you know, has always been for everybody. We don't do anything off color, vulgar, or dirty. You know, one of my favorite sounds, Al, is children and their parents laughing at the same time. That's one of my greatest memories of my childhood is sharing a laugh with my parents.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
That's music right there.
It is, you know, and I'm very blessed to be able to do it.
Well, I can't think of a better way to spend Mother's Day. All you people out there looking for a special thing to do for Mom, you know, do the flowers, do the dinner, but also do the Mabel Tainter in Menominee, Wisconsin on Sunday. Todd Oliver, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks for making us smile for all the hard work. I mean, it's not easy because you have a large cast and you have to get them through airports and get them window seats and food and lodging and everything. So, it's pretty impressive stuff.
Well, thank you. Thank you. The show's at 2 o'clock.
Yep.
And I'm sure they'll do doors at about 1 o'clock. Yeah, you know what? Mothers across America need to laugh. Laughter is a present you don't have to take back to the store. So
no kidding.
You all come out, we'll all laugh together and have a really good time. If you ever wonder what your dog would say if he could talk, you're going to find out Sunday, Mother's Day, 2 o'clock at the Mabel Tainter Theater.
Wonderful. Todd Oliver, Wisconsin Public Radio, thanks you.
Thank you, Al, and God bless all your listeners and you, and have a great year in broadcasting.
Todd Oliver and friends. By the way, Oliver is a real dog. That's cool. It's Sunday. MabelTainter.org is the website. Well, for some stages of western Wisconsin, it's a busy time. Others have completed their seasons. Specifics on who's who and what's what. Here again is Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will stage A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum through Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. The Children's Theater will hold auditions for A Little Night Music at 7 p.m. Monday and Tuesday at the Oxford. Death by Design will be presented by the Theater in the Woods Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Erica Kwan Memorial Theater in Shell Lake. Stuart Little will be staged weekdays for school groups through June 6th at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. Population 485, an adaptation of the book by the same name by local author Michael Perry, will be staged Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in the Kira Theater on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. And The Marvelous Marvelettes is playing weekends at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The show will continue weekends through May 20th. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Spectrum Memo, Friday there's an artist reception in the galleries at the Phipps Center in Hudson. There's a special Mother's Day gift clay workshop Saturday. Now's the time to register for summer classes. TheFipps.org is the website there. Well, thanks, and good luck, Allison. Kate and Dean, thanks, and you're not going anywhere. Hope we can get another quick one in. Fifth annual Go Paint Chippewa Valley concludes this weekend. The artist reception and award ceremony is Friday evening, 6:30. Exhibition and art sale is Saturday from 9 to 5, both at the Eau Claire Regional Art Center. I'm Al Ross for Jim Oliver. Thanks again. All you guys out there, we'll do it again next week. Bye now.